appreciate that song very much. We have so much sorrow and trouble here on earth that when you start thinking about heaven, it just wants you to go. But the Lord is wanting us to be here and live for Him a few more years or however long He wants us to live here and point the way for others. So, would help us each one. I'm thinking that is not in the Bible. It was not coined until after the King James Version was translated into English. So it's not in the Bible, but its synonym is all through the Bible. But this word was used a lot in like around 1770s, whenever the Revolutionary War came in and began in America with the British, and those that were British were called this, that stayed true to the British. But if you haven't guessed the word, then I'll tell you a little bit about a picture I saw in the paper. Now, those of you that were at the Path of Life this last week, you know what the word is because I talked to you about it in chapel. But there was a picture in the paper a while back of a man who had been injured in a bungee cord accident and had to have his legs amputated from the knee down. And his love is to work with wild animals, especially wild cats. There was a little lion cub that was injured somehow when it was just little. And he took that little cub in and bottle fed it and became so close to it that he sleeps with it. And that cub now is about almost 200 pounds. When it gets up on his bed, it kind of jiggles the bed. And he said he knows that it's a wild animal, and that there is still precautions to be had there with staying with a wild animal and keeping it in your home and being so close and sleeping with it. So I asked the children, I said, how many of you would like to sleep with a lion? And you know how many raised their hand? Not one. I said, y'all are pretty smart. I said, how long would it be if this lion missed a day or so of food? How long do you think you could trust that lion to sleep with it? If it missed a day of food, do you think that lion would be trustworthy to sleep by it after a day of going hungry? How about 2 days going hungry? 3 days going hungry? Would you still want to sleep with that lion, mister? That lion has a wild streak in it. It's not to be trusted. It's not a loyal friend. And the word I'm thinking of tonight is loyal. Loyal. What is a synonym of loyal? Faithful. Yes, to be faithful. To be faithful to someone or to a cause. Just a moment, let me find my note here that had the definition of loyal on it. Loyal means faithful to one's country or faithful to those persons, ideals, that one is obligated to defend or support. Being faithful. You know, I wonder how many people in America go to bed at night and feel like they're sleeping by a lion with their companion. Wondering if that companion was loyal to me today. I have heard more cases of someone, especially a wife, but it can be the man too, getting on the internet and carrying on an affair with somebody clear across in another state and falling in love with that person and leaving their companion in their home. One man was telling me he had 2 boys and then 2 boys, 4 boys, and his wife got online during the day, fell in love with the man, and left him. And it was just a shock to him. He was not aware she was doing that. And she wasn't loyal to him. She was not faithful to him and just left him. And it's a breakdown of friendship, of trust, when a person is not loyal. Faithfulness is very important, to be faithful. To be faithful to the Lord, to be faithful to one another. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit tonight, to be faithful. In Proverbs 11 and 13, there's a scripture here that is very important for us to keep in mind when it comes to being faithful. Proverbs 11 and 13, it says, "A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter." A talebearer revealeth secrets. Darlene has a little story about a little girl that she, you know, was younger. She was the little sister. Well, it's an Arthur story. And Arthur had secrets with his friend, and his little sister, she wanted secrets. She wanted a secret. Finally, she got a secret. She found one of her little friends had a problem, and she came upon him in this problem, and he said, "Don't tell nobody." And, oh, she had a secret, and it made her feel important. And she wanted so bad to keep it, but she also wanted people to know she had a secret. So she would say, "I got a secret." And her brother said, "You do? Well, tell me." "No, I can't. But I got a secret." It was so bad she put tape on her mouth to keep the secret. She wanted to keep that secret. She even dreamed she told the secret. And that friend that she told the secret on, he found out because the others started teasing him. And, oh, she woke up and she was just, "Oh, no." She told the secret. Anyway, as the story goes on in this little book, she was faithful to keep the secret. And she felt so good that she did not tell what happened to this little boy. And, you know, keeping a secret and telling, or keeping things quiet, rather, about someone that you know, or something you know about someone, that is a faithful, loyal spirit. That is where there is a building of trust. Confidence is built there, where you can tell somebody something that you know they're going to keep quiet. You know, when you get married and you have a companion, that companion knows a lot of secrets about you. They learn a lot of things. And a faithful companion will not go out and tell those secrets and expose those to everybody, but they will be quiet and keep that. Even when it comes to perhaps to their advantage, they will keep those matters quiet. A faithful, loyal person will. So the faithful spirit concealeth the matter. But somebody that wants to tell a tale and get the better advantage, they're going to expose and reveal secrets. And the enemy, and I'll just say, has a real sly way sometimes of doing it among us. He says, "Just tell Sister so-and-so so she can pray about it too." "Oh, okay, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but you know what I heard, and you can pray with me about it." You know what I'm saying, and I'm not saying it's wrong to pray for things, but I'm wanting to expose the way the devil works here. You'll follow me in time as I tell more, but the devil likes to break confidence. He likes to break loyalties. He likes to do that because he knows when there is a bond of loyalty, confidence, a feeling of trust, then people have power and they can come before God in a unit and pray and ask God for deliverance and help. And there's power there. So the devil does everything he can do to break down those walls of confidence and trust and loyalty to each other. There's a song, and I just thought of it, that says, "To each other, trueness vow." I'm not for sure of this number in our songbook, but it says, yes, maybe it's Church of God if you want to find that. And it says, "We'll vow to one another trueness," something like that. That's important. We can think, well, I'm true to God, but how come I need to be loyal to brother or sister so-and-so? The Lord wants us to be true to each other too. If we can't love our fellow brother and sister, and John brings this out, 1 John brings it out quite a bit. If you can't love your brother or your sister that you see, How can you show love to God whom you cannot see? But the Lord wants us to have a loyal, faithful spirit. Did you find that, Brother John? Okay. Okay. Yes, to each other and to God, eternal trueness vow. Yes, to be faithful to one another. And I remember, and I'm not wanting to say this to embarrass someone, but I remember one time Brother Sammons was preaching a message, and this really impressed me. He said he was a barber cutting in a barber shop some of the men's hair, and you know how a barber shop is. Men come in and talk. I used to take my boys there, and so I know they like to read the paper, and they'll talk about the latest things that's happening on. Just around that time, Brother Curtis Williams' daughter had passed away. And the men were in the shop, and they were talking about that. And they were telling how they felt about him trusting the Lord for his daughter, and she passed away. And some of the comments weren't very favorable. And Brother Sammons was cutting hair, and he was listening. And after a while, he had heard enough. And he said, I want to tell you men this, and maybe it's not exactly these words, but this is to the effect of what he said. He said, I want you to know that that man is my brother in the Lord, and I'm one of them. I'm one of those people where he goes to church. And he said the room got real quiet. Just got really quiet. They didn't know what to think of that. Being loyal to one another, being faithful. Something is said about a brother or sister, maybe out in the world. Are we willing to defend them and say, I'll stand by your side? And I think Sister Angela has that in her song, in the last of our, one of the songs in our hymnal. And it says, I'll stand by your side and I will defend you. Something is said, are we eager to defend that person or to jump on the bandwagon and say, oh yes, you know what? I never have had confidence in that person anyway. How loyal are we to one another? How faithful? Proverbs 25 and 13. It says, as the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refresheth the soul of his masters. You know, snow, the cold of snow, whenever the first frost comes, you want all the harvest in before then, because when the frost comes, it'll do damage to the fruit. It has to be brought in, and we aren't farmers as much as back in the olden days they were. But I know that it was very important, and it still is to farmers, to bring in all the tomatoes and all the last of the vines of the fruit and the vegetables, because when the frost comes the next day, those vines are going to be just wilted. And any fruit on there is going to be lost. So it is, it says here, the coldest snow in the time of harvest. Want to be ready before that time of harvest when the snow comes. So is the messenger, a faithful messenger to them that send him. He's coming in with a message. He refreshes that soul. He brings in a message that will refresh and prepare them. The harvest is out in, and let's rejoice. Whosoever boasteth himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. Boasteth himself of a false gift. And that's quite a picture image there with that verse, like clouds and wind without rain. It comes in, and you think, oh, we're sure going to get a rain, but there's not any rain, and perhaps there's been a drought. There's been a long wait for rain. Now I take it from these two scriptures and the figure of speech that we have here that the wording is saying that when we're faithful to one another, we're like a cold cup of fresh water to our brother or sister. They can come to us and be refreshed in us and be encouraged, knowing I can confide in my brother when I'm down, and he's not going to kick me farther. He's going to lift me up. He's going to encourage me. He's not going to try to put me down and make me feel worse than I already do, or build on my weakness to make himself look good. But my brother or my sister is going to refresh me and make me feel better. And he's not going to boast himself over me and make himself feel, well, this is how you ought to do it. I'm sorry you don't know how to do it right. But he's going to encourage me and lift me up when I come to my brother or sister and I'm down. They're going to help me feel better that I can make it. I can do it. I can. I know I can because they're behind me praying for me. They're encouraging me. They got some confidence in me. Maybe I was a disappointment. Maybe I did something I shouldn't have. Lord, help me. I don't want to do it again. But they believe in me that I'm going to do better. And I can. By the Lord's help, I can. And they're lifting me up and they're encouraging me. That's what the Lord wants us to do. He wants us to be a refreshing of rain, of blessing upon one another, an encouragement. I've been thinking a lot, too, about being an encourager and an agitator. Now, you know, when you put clothes in the washer and they are in there, what does that spinner thing do? Now, some of the new washers don't have those little spinner things in the middle. But what does it do to the clothes? It agitates those clothes. Wishes them around and it gets them clean, but it agitates those clothes and it makes them all, you know, rush together and push together and it gets the job done. And I was thinking in this way, we can be an agitator among one another and we can motivate each other to work for the Lord by agitating. And that can get the job done. But an encourager is much better. And let me give you an illustration of that. An encourager is somebody, like I said, that comes behind you and lets you know that you can do it. One encourager I think of in the Bible was Jonathan. The story of David and Jonathan. If you turn to 1 Samuel, and I'm going to first talk about Jonathan's father, Saul. 1 Samuel 16. You know, leaders, in order to get people to follow them, they have little ways of doing that. And some of those cues and ways of doing that, you don't catch. You just know they motivated you to do something. But Saul, he was a big man. He was tall. In fact, he was a head and shoulder above everybody else. So he stood out in a crowd. And no doubt, at first he felt very humble. Whenever Samuel came to anoint him, he was hiding in the stuff. And he did not feel like he was capable of leading the people. But then after he was anointed and he became leader, somehow in his leadership he became very self-confident in himself, that he was able to lead. And we know how he disappointed God and went ahead and made sacrifice before Samuel came, and Samuel told him that he had been forsaken because he had disobeyed. He became confident in himself, and I don't know exactly the kind of leader he was, but I do know he made some rash decrees. One time he told the men, they were right in the heat of a battle, and he said, "Nobody eats until we win the battle." And even the men, they said, "Why should he say that? We're weak and we're right in the heat of the battle and we need to eat for strength." And you remember what Jonathan did? He didn't hear his father say that. And he dipped his stick in some honey and ate of that honey. And some of the men saw him and they said, "Did you not know your father said anybody that ate before the battle was going to be killed?" Oh, Jonathan hadn't heard that. So whenever Jonathan was brought before his father and the men said he disobeyed, Saul said, "My son, you know, you've disobeyed my orders, and I, you know, what I said I will have to do." But the men intervened and they said, "No, Jonathan is a strong and mighty man in battle. Don't take his life. He did not hear what you said." And so they intervened for Jonathan, and Saul listened to the men and went ahead and spared his son. I don't know exactly what kind of a leader he was, but he had a way of forcing people somehow to obey him. And here you see In the 16th chapter of 1 Samuel, starting with the 19th verse, "Wherefore Saul sent messengers unto Jesse, and said, Send me David thy son, which is with the sheep. And Jesse took an ass laden with bread, and a bottle of wine, and a kid, and sent them by David his son unto Saul. And David came to Saul, and stood before him, and he, which is Saul, loved him greatly, and he became his armor-bearer. And Saul sent to Jesse, saying, Let David, I pray thee, stand before me, for he hath found favor in my sight. And it came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took a harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him." Now, David refreshed Saul. He was a loyal, faithful companion. He was his armor bearer. That meant that whenever Saul went out into battle, David was standing before him, holding the shield, and perhaps holding one of his sword or his spear to give to him when he needed the battle. But David was right there from then on in the battle with Saul. Now, I don't know exactly what age David was, but David must have gone back home after a time, because after that we have a story of David and Goliath. That was even before David stood before Goliath. And so we know that David had to have gone back home for a while, because he was out herding the sheep again whenever his father called him to come and go see his brothers, because his brothers were there in the battle with Saul. And David then went, and we know how he stood before, he heard the giant making the challenge, and he said, how come he's cursing God's people? We know how David stood before Goliath, and Saul let him do that. And he did not seem to recognize David at that time, according to the passage of Scripture. David was faithful. He killed the giant by the Lord's help. And in the last part of the 17th chapter, we're going to go through this a little quickly. Most of us are familiar with the story of David and Goliath. But I want to pick out some of the characteristics here. In the 55th verse of 1 Samuel 17, "And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistines, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, As my soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell. And the king said, Inquire thou whose son the stripling is. And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, Whose son art thou, thou young man? And David answered, I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. And then in the 18th chapter, And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul." Saul's son, Jonathan, he became very close to David. Now, there was something in Jonathan that made him realize David had the hand of the Lord upon him. As we go on into the farther part of the story, David was faithful in the way he came before the people. He behaved himself wisely. In the 14th verse of 1 Samuel 18, "And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Therefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him." Oh. Now, this lets me know that Saul had jealousy in his heart. Saul was a man that coveted the position of power and authority so much that he was not willing to put down his selfish desires for the others, for the children of Israel. He wanted to be great. He wanted to be honored. He wanted to be the one that all the women sang to, not somebody else. And so you see here a seed of jealousy beginning in Saul, of disloyalty. David had been faithful to him, had not done anything to harm him, had played the harp for him when he was a young man, had killed this Philistine and got Saul out of a bad predicament with his army. And yet, in his heart, Saul was letting this seed of disloyalty come in, of jealousy and envy, because Saul wanted to be great. Saul wanted to be honored. He was not wanting God honored. He was not wanting the people of God to be blessed. He was wanting Saul honored. And so he, as I could tell, let the enemy come in and puff him up, where he began to feel like a cloud without any rain, no blessing. He was just this cloud, Saul was. Nothing there but just a cloud, but no blessing. And he wasn't blessing others because, as we know, he began to pursue David. Spent all his energy pursuing David, who turned out to be a son-in-law, trying to take his life. And two times David had the advantage over Saul. Well, let's go a little bit about David and Jonathan first, jumping a little bit ahead of the story. But we know how Jonathan became very close to David. And Saul had a feast. And most of the time at the feast, his honored men would be there, his mighty men at the table to eat. And he had a special place of honor for David because David was his son-in-law. And when they came to eat and Saul saw that David's place was empty, he was angry. He said, "Where is that?" Called him a bad name. "Where is he at?" And Jonathan was there and he said, "Father, David's been faithful to you. Why do you call him bad?" And I'm paraphrasing. You can read the story through here in 1 Samuel 19 and on through here. And Jonathan took up for David. Saul, he was so angry that he took his javelin, his knife, and threw it at Jonathan for taking up for David. There was such an anger in him that he was losing his position. He was losing his power. He was losing his authority. When all in all, who had given him that position? Who had given him that authority? God. He was just another servant in God's hands that God had honored. But Saul lost that vision. He lost that thinking that God is in control. God is in power. God will take care of me if I will trust in him. And instead, Saul was wanting to do it in his own way, his own power, and get the glory. But Jonathan knew that the hand of the Lord was upon David. And so it was, they had made Jonathan and David a little agreement about Jonathan would go out and shoot his arrow out in the field. He had a signal. David was out hiding behind some rocks, I believe it was. And so it was that Jonathan, with a heavy heart, went out and gave the signal to the little boy that was going to get the arrows. He gave the signal that it was not safe for David to come back to the house, that his father Saul was going to try to take his life when he would come. And so after the little arrow boy went back to the palace there, Jonathan and David embraced, and they wept and they cried with each other because they knew that the enemy of jealousy and strife and hatred was separating them. They were close in heart. They wanted to be good brother-in-laws, brothers together. But because the devil had worked a wedge there, they couldn't be. And they were very sad about it. David went on and had to flee. And as we know, Saul pursued after him. And I think he pursued him, I believe it was about 8 years, 8 to 10 years. And I can't remember exactly now. I'm sorry, I forgot. But it was quite a few years that Saul pursued after David. It could have even been longer than that. But Saul tried his best to get David and to kill him. And every time, Saul was in the cave one time, and David and his men were in the back of the cave. And David came up in the night when they were sleeping, Saul and his men, if you remember, and I think that time he took a strip of Saul's garment, I believe, when he was in the cave. And when Saul left and went down into the valley, David stood at the mouth of the cave and called to him and said, "Whose is this?" And Saul realized he had sinned. He was pursuing David, and David was being faithful and loyal to him. And the Lord smote Saul's heart, and he said, "Oh, my son, why am I doing this?" And he told his men, "Let's go back. Let's go home." They went home. And then Saul began to let the enemy talk to him. "You know, you aren't going to have any respect as long as David's living. You aren't going to be honored. You're going to lose your power. You're going to lose control." And Saul went out again after David. That's the way the devil works. The devil likes to lift people up and puff them up, and then after a while, they don't see someone else just quite as good, and then after a while, disloyalties come in. Disloyalties and no confidence and cracks and crevices that the devil can work through. The devil's sly. He likes to work that way. But David was loyal all the way through. And even whenever Saul finally in a battle was killed and Jonathan, David didn't dance. He told the people, "You put on sackcloth and you mourn and you grieve because a mighty man has fallen this day. We aren't going to rejoice over Saul's death. We're going to cry. We're going to pray. We're going to beseech God to have mercy upon us." That was a loyal spirit. David was an encourager. If you read the Psalms, David encouraged people. He lifted people up. Even when it was times of discouragement for him, times when he was down, he would say, "But I know the power of God, and I know he's going to help us." And he encouraged his men. He lifted them up. He said, "Look to God." He was an encourager and a lifter-upper. He encouraged the people. "Don't be discouraged. God is faithful. God will see us through." And through David's reign, he brought about peace to the children of Israel. When his son Solomon took the throne, there was peace with the other countries around about because David encouraged his men and his people in the Lord. That is a legacy that the Lord wants to pass down to each one of us. That's something that we can take and learn from. The Lord wants us to be encouragers. He wants us to be loyal to one another, not eager to find something in somebody that I can pick on and pull apart. But he wants us to find something in someone that's good and encourage them in it. "Yes, you've got a good voice. Why, your testimony was really good." And encourage each other. And I don't mean in a phony way. I mean really encourage one another. And lift one another up and encourage. And maybe if somebody is found weak in something and, you know, they're down, lift them up. Encourage them. There's a scripture in Galatians that says that if a brother is found at fault, you who are spiritual, restore such a one, remembering yourself, lest you yourself fall in that like manner. That's not exactly how it's worded. Let me find it here. But that's how it means. You yourself restore such a one. I think it's in Galatians. Let me find it here somewhere. It could be here, Galatians 6. Anyway, is it, brethren? Okay, yes, you're right. Galatians 6 and 1. Thank you, Brother Jonathan. "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another." Okay, the Lord wants us to bear one another's burdens in meekness. He wants us to carry the burden sometimes quietly. If it's something that is not to be told, something that we know might hurt our brother or sister's reputation, keep it quiet. It doesn't have to be told. In Matthew, the 24th chapter, Jesus tells this story, this parable. Matthew 24 and 42. He gives a warning here. He's telling about the end of time. He said, "As it was in the days of Noah," this is the 37th verse, Matthew 24 and 37, "as it was in the days of Noah, So shall be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. It came suddenly. They were just living their normal everyday life, not expecting anything unusual to happen. And all of a sudden, it began to come rain from the sky. They had not seen rain before. They began to hear the thunder in the sky and the lightning flashing. And they knew something was happening. And they remembered, oh, Noah, he had given us a warning. He had told us something was going to happen. There was going to be a flood. But by this time, God had shut the doors to the ark. It was God that shut that door. And they could not get in. And no doubt many, many people pounded on that ark running in. And Noah and his men, his sons, could not open the door. So Jesus gives this warning in the 42nd verse. He says, "Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, if the goodman of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and a wise servant, whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season?" Now, Jesus is saying, you don't know when I'm coming back again, but he's coming, the Lord's coming for somebody that's faithful and loyal. Loyal to the Father and loyal to one another. Now, who is it that the Lord's going to trust to give meat, to feed God's people, to give them encouragement, to help them along the way? Who is it that God's going to trust? Who's faithful? "Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, My Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Jesus has given a warning here. And before that, he had talked about giving... No, it's a little farther on. Giving a cup of cold water to those that are in need. They're in the 25th chapter. He talks about that. And helping those that are discouraged. Lifting them up. And Jesus is giving this admonishment to us today. He says, in the last days, people are going to be loose. They're going to feel free in that I'm my own boss. I don't have to be under anybody, and I don't have to listen to anybody. I don't have to be loyal to anybody. I can make it on my own. Don't I make a big check, paycheck on my own? You know, this attitude of independence. And when people get that attitude, they start not being as loyal to others. They lose sometimes their loyalty to one another. And I'm just... This has been a challenge to me, and being careful about this, because the Lord wants us to be loyal and faithful to Him and to one another, and to realize that it is all given to us by God. It's from God, and He wants us to be humble before Him and humble to one another, and realizing that if my brother or sister needs help, I will lift them up, because I could be down the next day. Something could happen, and I could be down. I could be sick. I could be financially broke or whatever. I could be down. Count all your blessings as from the Lord, and don't let it make you a cloud without rain that's not blessing others. Where you're not loyal, where you're not feeling that desire to help and encourage, but instead to agitate. Well, I don't know why you can't do any better. You know, and I hope I'm not being too harsh about this. I hope I'm encouraging you to realize that this challenge here, and it's been a challenge to me, great challenge to me. I want to move up closer in this myself, where I am able to encourage, to have a faithful spirit, to be able to lift others up and to be loyal and not to hurt someone, but to let others know I believe in you, and I know that the Lord is with you. Keep fighting the true fight. We need one another. And as the times get more evil, we're going to need each other more. We're going to need to band together and pray and be faithful. And I know the Lord is with us. I believe that. I believe that there's others out there that want this. They want to have a loyal friend. They want trueness, but there's so many that have had broken relationships. Maybe it's a companion. Maybe it's in their parents and brothers or sisters. And they're drifting. And they don't know where to go. And they're looking. They're lost. And they're wanting help. May the Lord help us to know how to reach out to them more. I want the Lord to help me too. Thank you for your time.